Welcome to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider. Pete Sampson, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley. We saw 2 full hours, basically, of practice on Saturday. I thought it was probably the most enlightening of the open practices that we've seen. And it was, I believe, for us, it was the 4th 2-hour block that we've seen. We've got the spring game coming up this Saturday at 12:30 in Notre Dame Stadium. But it was the first time for me that I came away thinking Brandon Wimbush has a chance, not that it will happen, but has a chance to be the quarterback we all thought he was going to be a year ago.
I agree. I mean, I don't think it'd be difficult to disagree with that. He made some throws, some touch throws that when they were released, it's like, oh, that's not good. And it clears a linebacker and just falls right into the hands. He threw a couple, you know, raindrop deep balls that were absolutely perfect. And the other, in accordance with what you're saying, Pete, about being such an enlightening practice, Avery Davis, who we hadn't heard anything, or we hadn't seen anything. We'd heard good things and hadn't seen anything, and he obviously was good too. So, I mean, certainly from, I don't know who else might have stood out that we hadn't seen like that before, but certainly those two on offense.
I thought as recently as last week, I kind of sarcastically said to Pete walking out, can you be a good football team with no quarterbacks? And that is not what it looked like this week. Brandon Wimbush had a really good day, and he's not even allowed to run in these things. He made a play, and I think the three of us all watched it together, where he released right, and he kind of played, I think it was Asmar Blau, but I'm not sure, he played the linebacker. He and Alize Mack played a 2-on-1 game, and it was just absolutely perfect.
When Bilal broke,
it looked like a quarterback playing, not an athlete playing.
Quarterback instincts.
It was. It was yeah. Something we didn't see in games last year. I'm writing about it this morning. He was better this spring than he was last spring or last August, when we all thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, the throw that really grabbed me was the one to Fink, where he had some traffic in his face, and he threw. And this is something we talked about in last podcast all last year. It's like, he was unable to throw to spots. He had to see man, right, to throw to man. And that throw, I was like, who is that going to? It was just like, it was lofted into a space where he knew Fink was going to run into. And that's just not something
that's what I'm talking about. When it's released, it's like, oh, that's going to get picked, or where's that going? And all of a sudden, a receiver showed up in that spot. And it's enlightening. It's an awakening, hopefully. We saw some good things last August, but the kind of stuff that we're talking about here, throwing to a space, and I think that's a good point, that he didn't do that.
And I think last year we sort of subconsciously gave him the benefit of the doubt. He was new. Okay, this is automatically going to get better. You know, you can see all the potential here. We weren't really nitpicking everything the way that we do now with him, because we have...
We don't give him the benefit of the doubt now.
No. At all. You know, we have a whole season to go over and see some of the things that went well and just were disasters.
He interviewed well. There's when you talk to a kid and he shows great intelligence, it's like, okay, well, this guy's got it all.
He must have football instincts. He's smart. That isn't really the way it works. I misspoke. No. He was much better Saturday than he was last August. I said this spring. That would not be, as Brian Kelly said, that was not a capsule of the spring. That was by far his best effort, which is fine. It's one of his last efforts of the spring, too.
Yeah.
It's showing progress. Right. And it's the number one thing you need to see. Because, as Pete Sampson's fond of saying on other topics, what are we doing here if they don't have a better quarterback, right?
Like, that's what the coaching is for. I think other things that impressed me, I like where the offensive line was going. I felt like that was going to get sorted out correctly one way or the other. Like, they had 6 or 7 candidates, and it was a question of making the best decision opposed to whether you're going to make a right or a wrong decision. I do think at defensive end, there was a moment where Khalid Kareem limped off in 11-11. It was nothing serious. But at that point, you're like, this guy is way more important than I think people realize. And then the safety position, I am cautiously optimistic would be too out there. I'm like cautiously optimistic there, but I do think I'm seeing individual improvements from guys. Will it all fit together in a functioning secondary in a better way this fall? I don't know, but I see guys that tackle better in a way that when we were at Culver last year was a disaster. I don't see problems at the back end as much as I maybe thought that I would when spring started.
Unless it's unless it's a handful of those, a couple of those safeties in those one-on-one drills, Studstill repeatedly, you know, Dante Vaughn repeatedly misses tackles. But that's a tough drill. But getting back to your point, Pete, about the offensive, that's a really tough drill for the defense. Yeah. There's no doubt about
it. But like
that.
At Culver, those safeties couldn't tackle each other. They did that. They did a similar thing in Culver, and like they were beating themselves.
Right. You know, they couldn't in Miami or Palo Alto, right?
And that was that carried over. And that was the first time we saw Gilman, and we said, "Wow, Gilman doesn't look that good." And we still really haven't seen what we're hoping to see there. But I want to get back to the offensive line because I interviewed, among the interviews we did the other day, I interviewed Liam Eichenberg, and he's at left tackle where he says he's more comfortable because that's the position that he's mainly played. I found it interesting, and I thought of something that you've said in the past, Pete, that, you know, everybody loves Harry Hiestand. Well, now, those that play for him and then went on to the NFL loved Harry Hiestand. I'm not saying Eichenberg spoke poorly about him. He just spoke highly of Jeff Quinn, like this is a guy that I can relate to without actually putting anybody down. And I don't know if that's what was intended, but that's a good sign. He, you know, the main thing with him, I thought it was interesting, he said, you know, I really did a lousy job of going up and going to up to Coach Hiestand's office and looking at film. I didn't do it much. Now I'm doing it with Coach Quinn. So I mean, it was an honest moment of saying, you know, maybe a lot of it had to, my lack of confidence and lack of offensive knowledge had something to do with the fact that I didn't look at enough film. But he's doing that now. He's much more confident. What happens with an offensive lineman when you gain confidence? Now you can make aggressive mistakes, and that's better than passive mistakes, right? Having said all that, I'm not saying that he's the answer, and that's why I like the move of Lug to left tackle, because he's a guy that they really like. He's next in line. You might as well have him competing with the guy that hasn't established himself in game competition.
It's hard to ask a young offensive lineman about their teammates. It's not like when McGlinchey's there, he can talk about everybody, frankly. But Tommy Kramer echoed what you said. He's just so much more confident. He is playing like you saw him.
Well,
in
Long
the past
said it. Kelly
film.
Said it.
Yeah.
Eichenberg said it. Just for, I'm sure Jeff Quinn would
for
say
for a guy
it.
Like Kramer to say it, he used to compete with him. Like he spoke openly about it. It was you don't see that very often. It's just there's. I talked to Jack about this, by the way, as an aside. It seems like every offensive lineman in Notre Dame, and this is not the case, is small now because they're not Mike McGlinchey. Every time I look at him, I'm like, he's just nowhere near as big as Mike McGlinchey is. Well, nobody is as big as Mike McGlinchey. So every time I see that guy, I just think he's the biggest person in the world.
They do have a 6'8" tackle recruit.
They're not small. These guys are not small. Yeah. It's just for 2 years of Mike McGlinchey and Quinn Nelson coming out and talking to us. It's like,
no, you're right. The only guy, Ruland, is the one that kind of stands out a little bit. Is okay, he's not as big as some of these other guys. But I love the, you know, you get Kramer and Bars at guard. Those are some hosses now.
Bars, I was watching the defense. That's why I find this relevant in this all practice in the scrimmage. And Bars had a really good scrimmage. And you and I think all three of us have been like, yeah, he's good. When's the more going to show up? And I was specifically watching Tillery and the other inside guys. Dude Treadway was playing because Bonner doesn't scrimmage. And I just kept noticing Alex Bars. And that's something we've been waiting for.
Chip Long said he's had, you know, the best spring, which I was a little surprised because I thought you might say Mustafer. But, you know, we don't see all the snaps, and Mustafer is going to be just fine. He's in great shape.
Yeah, but I agree with the pulling aspect of it. That was that part of when they're pulling Nelson and Bars last year, pulling Kramer and Bars this year is still really good. I mean, those are still 2 6'5" and up athletes who are 300 pounds and are light on their feet.
And that, and getting back to Eichenberg, that's another reason why he likes the left tackle, because they put the left tackle on the move a little bit more, and he feels like, you know, he credited Matt Bayless as well. He's just when he goes out on the field, he's just a lot more confident kid in what he's doing.
We should remember when we watch games and grade the games this year that they don't have to have a mutant at guard to be a good offensive
right.
It's okay. It's,
but it helps. Half man, why
half,
does it help?
Half man, half mountain.
That's how you
win. Have to be
I mean,
there.
That's how you win the Joe Moore Award. Yeah. You gotta have a mutant,
true.
Right?
I found it refreshing that Brian Kelly admitted what is obvious, that I'm not going to sit here and say our run game is going to be better this year than last year without McGlinchey and Nelson. Because coaches are always like, well, we're going to, you know, we have depth from within. We have more guys who are going to, like, okay, that's fine. But Nelson Mizzou.
You're not going to average 270 yards rushing a game.
That's once in a generation at a place that has a lot of really, really good offense.
Well, yeah, and you had an established running back in Josh Adams, and you don't have an established running back now.
I actually am, this is too early to say it, I think the word pedestrian might come up with Notre Dame's running backs this year.
It could.
I do not have... I don't have faith in one of them following through on his potential.
Yeah,
and
Tony Jones. And the other one, Tony Jones, is...
If Jones can... Last year when he was making guys miss, he was getting a lot more yards than just one or two. He still makes guys miss.
I want to see it completely healthy and a very confident... You know, Tony Jones is kind of a shy kid a little bit.
I agree.
At least
he could have a very good year, and I might be wrong. I don't look at him and think...
But I think a healthy... Yeah, he's more elusive, though, than I think we give him credit for. If he's healthy and confident, I think he can be a pretty good back. But I hear what you're saying. We don't know. We don't know anything about Jafar Armstrong or what Jameer Smith are capable of providing. And so it's up to those two. And Dexter Williams has to stay healthy and know what he's doing and, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, O'Malley, I agree with you. I think the running back position is sort of open and probably will stay that way through the end of November. It's not going to be a year where I think they have a clear number one, as much as I think Dexter Williams has all the
talent to be a
clear number
one. That's why we said on Saturday, Tony Jones was running mainly with the ones. That probably doesn't mean anything because they both have to be the number one running back. Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the wide receiver position. I don't think much has changed for me over the course of the spring. I disagreed with what Brian Kelly said initially that, Boykin was way ahead of
Prince. Yeah. I think Chip Long would disagree too based on his reaction.
But they need to practice it. You need three starting receivers, and I think they have three good starting receivers. And I wrote this on Sunday. I think that Notre Dame's starting receivers will be clearly better than the receivers that Notre Dame started last season with.
I wrote this on Monday. I think their seven receivers are going to be better than the players that played last year. If you throw them all out there, if you figure Fink as a backup and then contributing backup because of a better quarterback, Kevin Austin as a talent, Lindsey as a deep threat on
occasion. I said Saturday in our instant analysis, I've liked what Javon McKinley has done. I thought he did some good things Saturday. It's not the first time I've seen that.
He's had a good spring. He ended practice with a
terrible drop.
Yeah, really bad. I think it was an alligator arm drop too, if I recall. But
those are some of the worst kinds.
They are the worst kind. But he had he's had a good spring though. I've continually noticed him in one-on-one, and I mean, just going back to mid-March now, it's been going on forever in spring. I mean, he beat Julian Love deep in 11-11 on a post. That's not something. I didn't even know he was on the team at times, Javon McKinley, in the past years. Just you forget him. He didn't stand out ever at all.
In fairness, you didn't see as much from McKinley?
I think he's had some good practices. I thought last Saturday, just the drop at the end was a killer. Like, you can't drop a touchdown on the last play.
Indelible impression
for the offense to be, win the scrimmage. Yeah, and everybody's be cheering for you. Yeah.
But spring practice has been going on for a long time. So long it was snowing when it started.
Still is?
Yeah, still is.
It's right now, as a matter of fact. For those coming into town this weekend.
That's it for segment one, Irish Illustrated Insider. We've got a bunch of questions up and down the roster next.
Segment two, burning up the boards. First question from Statman72. The observation of Drew Tranquil's impact is less obvious at Buck, and the move of Jenmark Heath could raise concerns about the linebackers as a group. Is it possible the linebacker performance will rank behind cornerbacks, D-line, and safeties in 2018?
No, it's not possible. But I do think concerns about the linebacker group overall are fair, and we've had them since last season ended. It's just not a deep group, and it's why Coney and Tranquil coming back were basically non-negotiable for Notre Dame being good on defense this year, because they don't have guys to throw out there. Think about what we'd be watching if Coney and Tranquil left. We'd be watching starters Jonathan Jones and DJ Morgan, or is it Jordan?
Maybe
Jenmark
Heath would have moved up to that spot.
I don't know.
Maybe they wouldn't have moved.
It's not good.
Yeah, maybe they wouldn't have moved Jameer Jones and left him in there.
Would Asmar Bilal be starting and Isaiah Robertson? Is that the starting rover? I mean, these are not good situations.
No, it's the depth is the issue. But Coney's the best player on the team, and Tranquil's one of the 10 best players on the team, one of the 5 or 6 best if he's playing rover. I would think it was one of, that was probably my observation. It's just, he's not as noticeable a Buck as he was awesome in the spring last year. That's part of this. Drew Tranquil at Rover last year, we just kept looking at each other like, holy cow, this guy is born to play this spot. I don't think he's born to play Buck. They need him to play Buck. He needs to play Buck for this future.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good teammate, or a great teammate. But he was awesome at Rover last year. I mean, he was a great guy to watch play football last year. He had the instincts for it, and I think he'll look better in real games than he does now. I'm not saying he's underperforming. It's just he made the Rover position last year.
I wouldn't read anything into what we've seen to indicate that Tranquil's not...
Rover is worse, though, than it was last year. Because he was really good at it.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, I love that inside tandem. Coney and Tranquil, I think they're going to be... Coney will probably have the most tackles because, as you said, he's the best player, certainly best linebacker. But I think they're going to be fine. I mean, you're right, Pete, though. They have to stay healthy. They're not going to go very deep there. I think Jonathan Jones can play. I think he's a legitimate player.
Good backup if he's the backup all year long, right? Would you agree with that, though?
I would. He's just, he doesn't have ideal stature, but, there are other guys playing in the NFL that don't have ideal stature that can be effective.
O'Malley, you said Rover would be worse than it was last year, but I would argue Buck and Mike will be better. Maybe by a lot. I mean, you think about where Notre Dame
Mike
was.
Will be better because Coney's there instead of...
Yeah, well... Even if it was Coney versus Coney, like Coney at the start of last year or at spring was terrible.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Morgan never really delivered. Martin
was inconsistent.
I took you wrong. I was thinking Tranquil this year won't be better than Coney was last year. But I know what you're saying. The two positions together.
I think
now,
you started Morgan and Martini versus Coney and Tranquil. I
agree with you.
That's a big blowout for 18 over 17.
So fortunately, they've got a nice freshman class of linebackers. I would say at this point led by Bauer and Simon.
Probably, yeah. I think it'd be
I mean, you
I
know,
just think
Lamb,
Lamb
just,
needs
yeah,
balance
La-
in a year,
yeah. I mean,
right?
Lamb just is not physically ready, and Agufo, I
he needs time too.
I never pictured him actually as being a starter in Notre Dame per se.
But he certainly needs.
But you right, and so time. Jim Markeith. I mean, that's a good move. You better prepare some people, and he's a physical savvy kid who can add weight easily.
Oddly, the move, I like the move for Jen Markeith because we all like him better near scrimmage, right? But yes. I had Jen Markeith in January as Rover,
right,
with Bilal staying as a backup Buck.
Yeah.
It's intriguing that they aren't going with that. Not staying as a backup, but moving to a backup Buck role. I really thought Jen Markeith might be the starting Rover. He will not be now because he didn't have enough time to get into that anywhere near that.
Well, but Simon maybe.
Now they're getting him close to the... I just like it that he's closer to scrimmage.
Boy, it's asking a lot for Simon to win that job in August,
Yeah, I mean, Usu Koromoa has not really been around a whole lot this spring. Looked good on Saturday in a brief glimpse. Is there any reason why they couldn't then say, like, actually, we're going to try you a Rover for Jen Markeith? No.
No, you're right.
So
get him up there.
I mean, going back to the original question about Statman 72, I mean, I get his point. I see what he's saying. I don't think the linebackers would be worse than the safeties or less effective than the safeties. I can see the safeties certainly improving.
If you deleted Tranquil and or Coney, then I would say yes.
Yeah.
But we're assuming these guys are going to stay healthy.
Yeah.
AMM101. Offense, everything so far points to Brandon being QB1, assuming he is the starter for the entire season, a big if. Over under 20 passing touchdowns and over under 15 rushing touchdowns, and the money question, over under 55% completion percentage. O'Malley, wheelhouse question.
Exactly.
I think you wrote it to me.
You're taking the words right out of my mouth.
If he's a starter all year or most of the year, over 20 passing touchdowns, what do you have? 16, 15, 16 last year. He had probably 16,
I believe.
He'll be over that if he just improves a little bit. The key, I'm going to skip the... It'll be under 15 rushing, I think, because that's a
big number. 14 last year, that's a big number.
He destroyed the program record by getting 14 last year, so he probably wouldn't get to that. I mean, if it was 12, I'd be tempted to go either way on that one, so maybe over 12 again.
You'd like to think they're more capable of throwing the football inside the
yes,
red zone.
But I love the fact that the quarterback takes the ball and runs it in for a touchdown all the time in the red zone because you can't throw an interception when you run the ball.
It's one of the greatest arguments for Brandon Wimbush. It's one of the greatest arguments for wanting Brandon Wimbush to win the job.
Yes, there's nothing better than watching a team run it in the end zone because Notre Dame hasn't been able to do it enough under Brian Kelly. So I think that would be great if he can approach that. I'm going over 55 because what's my stated line? 58%, and he's a player every Notre Dame fan likes. Over 58%, and Notre Dame wins.
That's a 6-point something improvement over last
year.
Just
complete your horizontal passes. Don't bounce them to people in Miami when they're running all around and taking off.
Okay, let me ask you this question. You're saying that now. Would you have said that before Saturday?
Well, I said it in January.
Well, you did. Hey, okay,
I said he
what about you? What about you, Pete?
I would have. So I would go over 20, under 15, over 55. I would have said that if I was not there on Saturday, but now I say it with a lot more confidence. How about that?
I would agree with
and
exactly what you just said.
15 is just a massive
said.
Number. That's why we're saying under. I mean, he could do it, but it's a huge number.
Tony
Rice had 9 in his highest year, so people understand Tony Rice is a good running.
In comparison, that's really hard to believe. Yeah. Of course. You didn't play as many regular season games, and you didn't count the bowl game.
True.
So it was like 2 games less, right?
And the running backs had 50, so that throws things off.
Yeah.
SR5452, how do you see Coach Lee putting his stamp on the defense, or what do you think he will do differently than Elko?
The one thing that he'll definitely do differently, Brian Kelly said it, that they'll try to redirect routes more than Elko's defenses did, which I've always thought it's a good thing. I've mentioned the 2012 team that did it so well. It's a big reason why their defense was that good.
Was it Brian Kelly or you that said? No, Brian Kelly said they protected their safeties in 2012,
yes.
And that's why the safeties were so good. That was an interesting point.
It means more coming from him, don't
you
think?
Well, it would have been a good observation either way, Tim. But I thought that was an interesting observation I hadn't thought about. I mean, when you think about it, Notre Dame gave up 9 passing TDs in the regular season. I like to say the regular season in 2012. In the whole regular season of 2012, they gave up 9 passing TDs.
You don't
want
to mention that.
They only gave up one. The first rushing touchdown was in Norman.
Yeah. That's
in like mid-October.
And it took them like 9 tries.
All right, so how else do you think the guys will be different, the defense will be different under Clark Lee?
I haven't been able to write about this because I just want to get more info, but I've talked to, I think, Nick Watkins and Sean Crawford about it, just about how the corners and safeties are playing a little bit more, sort of not combination coverages, but meeting together and sort of understanding what one another is doing. And Watkins suggested that Lee is more likely to kind of like leave the corners on an island a little bit than what Elko did, where it was a lot of 4-deep zone and just like keep the big plays down.
But that may have had,
I think
the safeties had something to do with that.
So that's like, is that a change in what they're calling, or is that a change in what they're calling because the safeties are better? I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But I think that will be a difference that we're talking about in the fall.
The safeties are, we should put this out there, the safeties are going to be better because they were terrible last year. And,
right.
And if they're, then I think they'll be at least fine, right? They'll be better than they were last year.
Okay.
They have new blood and
all right,
new
tell
blood
me the,
and more
Nick,
players.
Tell me the safeties this year that will be better this year than they were last year.
Gilman.
Okay, I agree.
As a reserve, Nick Coleman as a reserve player. You know what I'm saying? He's not a 12-game starter that
and
has to make every
do
play.
Do you see Elliott and Stutz still being better?
I see Elliott being a better football player than he was last year. I don't know where Studstill's going to fit on next year's team.
I see Houston Griffith playing.
And I see Houston Griffith being a much better young talent than they had.
And you have Derek Allen coming in.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Houston Griffith could have won the job last year.
Swap Houston Griffith in for Devin Studstill. Like, that's an upgrade. Jalen Elliott is like, to me, that's the big wild card. Like, he needs to be a lot better. The way the coaches talk about him during spring makes me think that he is. I haven't seen a ton. But I haven't seen the glaring, like, ugh.
He hasn't looked bad since that first practice where we were watching Mac just toy with everybody.
Yeah.
And
that's another
I have the indelible.
You have LSU on your mind.
I have LSU on my mind.
Yeah.
No, it's
he was
fair.
But
like,
it
he
is
was
totally
whiff,
fair.
He was whiffing.
But
in
we can't,
LSU,
they can't have a quarterback if we have LSU on our minds either. You know, like, it's totally fair. You feel it. He was whiffing on tackles.
Yeah.
But they had the worst looking quarterback play in the world against LSU. We don't think that'll come out either.
It's weird because, like, I sort of can't get past the Stanford game when I think about the defensive back play because they got picked apart by a redshirt freshman quarterback.
Or the quarterback play.
Yeah. Or the quarterback
or
play.
The quarterback.
But I just, like, some ball skills at all from the safety position is what they need. And I think that they will get it.
Yeah. Griffith, Allen, Gilman. Don't you... I mean, you're lower. None of us are super high on Jalen Elliott like some other places are, but you're very low on him. Do I think he'll be better, like a functional safety?
Yeah, but it comes back to me saying what I always say. I need to see it.
Of course. We need to see Derek Allen at this level.
I don't know that I've seen it in the spring, but I don't know that that's fair for me to even say based upon how much we've seen in the situations that they've been in.
Does everyone feel like Stud still's the odd man out in the collection of safeties we just said?
I thought for sure when spring started, I do feel like he's gotten quite a bit better. So now I don't know.
I mean, different safety coach, you just never know. But, I don't know. With Elliott and Stutzel, I just don't know. I need to see it.
In summary, Tim does not know.
I don't know. Should I say it enough? Yeah. Should I say it again?
How do you feel about those guys? Yeah. Matty Hebb's 14. Is Tillery looking like he is taking well from his switch from the nose to the other DT spot? And do you guys expect a big season from him?
I do. I think he looks like a guy who would start at basically every place other than Alabama and Clemson. Notre Dame doesn't have a lot of those guys on the defensive line. I mean, he's physically really, really impressive. He's sort of in a contract year now, and he's going to be taking basically a saxophone class in the fall. So I would expect his senior season to be a lot like Sheldon Day's, maybe even better, where for the first...
Where Sheldon Day took one class.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. For the first time, he's able to be a football player first and almost only, where he's been doing a million things in the past.
I was always surprised that he played nose. And I understand, like last year, Bonner was unproven.
They didn't even have Daniel Cage, remember? They knew he was gone.
Right, and they didn't know Daniel Cage. So, yeah, I mean, I get that. But clearly, three technique is a better position for him with his length. It gives him a little bit more of an opportunity to be maneuverable inside there. And I like the comment, Pete, about a contract year. If playing professional football is important to him, he's got a great opportunity staring him in the face. I'm a lot more convinced that playing professional football is important to him today than we were last year or the year before, you know, our freshman year. But it's a great opportunity. It's definitely his best position to make an impact.
Mike Elston said he thinks Jerry Tillery's a good pass rusher. You just can't be a good pass rusher when you're head up on, the entire time. No one's a good pass rusher from that spot. Look, Tillery is graduating a full year early because he's early in summer. Sheldon Day did the same thing. They go take a class. Jerry Tillery's line to us was, I'm going to learn to play the saxophone. I'm going to become the best defensive lineman in the country.
Those are his two goals for
the year. For the year. It's a nice goal when you graduate early from Notre Dame. And I know people are right now listening to this saying, can't believe he's only taking one class. I thought, yeah, dude, he graduated in 3 years.
Yeah.
He can do nothing while playing football. He could just not attend anything next year and it's okay. As Zeke Mata said his senior year when he didn't graduate, well, I'm a lot better this year because that's all I have to do is concentrate on football. So if these guys work, they shouldn't have to take any of these.
My, how things have changed at the University of North.
Don't you agree, though? They have to.
I'm not disagreeing I'm just saying that, as you know, in my early years of covering Notre Dame football, I mean, they wouldn't, even if it were true, they wouldn't allow them to make comments like that. And it wasn't true because they still had to take full course load.
Drew Tranquil, mechanical engineering, is going to take a little bit of a break. So.
Well, God bless him. God bless him. He's earned it.
All right, we got some Twitter questions. This was one that I think we got three times over, so I'm going to go with Greg Flaming here, and he wants to know, what do you think about Avery Davis and his spring performance? Is this just sort of a spring fling, as he says? And then he apologizes for using the term spring fling.
I saw that, actually. That's good.
I think we've said a couple times that, you know, prior to Saturday, we might have thought so, even though Chip Long certainly singled him out last Thursday. And then we proceed to see him do some things in practice where, like, oh, okay, he could be dangerous. Dangerous in the slot, dangerous jet sweep guy, dangerous return potential. I love that aspect of LSU's offense when Notre Dame is preparing to play him. I think it's anytime you can widen the field and make them defend the entire width of the field, it's a good thing. I think he's the real deal. We need to see it in a game, obviously, but based upon what we saw on Saturday, he's the real deal.
I should clarify, I like jet sweeps as long as they're not too Chris Brown at the goal line for his first career carry against Northwestern. But Avery Davis...
All-time bad play.
Man. I was calling it the Avery Davis thing. Is this thing... What is this? Everyone just tells you, you know what? I think this is real. He Zach Madonna is the best offensive player next year, but Avery Davis is going to be a 3 or 4 year offensive player for Notre Dame, and it will not be a quarterback. He's a good football player with the ball in his hands.
He did have a couple late drops, like within 4 snaps of each other the other day. So probably not a real totally accomplished.
That's why I like the jet sweep and the return most for now. I mean, it's a work in progress. He's not going to go out there and just kill people, but he's another weapon they're going to have over the next 3 years. And he was not a weapon when he was never going to play quarterback in Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I'll buy it. I think that somebody on our message board was talking about, it sounds like he's going to be a real superstar. I'm not buying that.
No, but he's a contributor. I'm
buying 5 touches a game. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. That might be a lot.
That'd be a lot. It'd be great, though.
But if he is able to sort of kind of force a defense to think about how you're defending Notre Dame a little bit differently, I mean, another thing Chip Long mentioned last week was we're not going to get caught in a position where we have to scrap a personnel package, the 2-back set, due to injuries this year. Like, we have enough guys to throw out there. And think about, like, what Notre Dame's offense looked like when it was Tony Jones and Josh Adams as your 2-backs. Now think about what it would look like if it was Dexter Williams and Avery Davis. That's pretty interesting to me. It's a completely different approach, but that's a lot of speed on the field. I think Avery Davis has gone from a guy who was a quarterback trying to pretend to be a running back to a guy who's just a running back / wide receiver.
It's a no-lose position change, not to rip on him. He was never going to play quarterback in Notre Dame. The guy coming in this year is better than him, and the guys there right now are better than him at quarterback, but he is a better athlete than all of them. Well, he's a better athlete than most of them. He is, I mean, he's real. It's real suddenness, real quickness, and that's why I'm intrigued to see if they even audition him. I'm sure they'll audition him. At kick returner, if they wonder if he could help them there. He'll be good someday, and he was not going to be at Notre Dame in 3 years if he was a quarterback.
In the scenario you just painted, Pete, I mean, Jafar Armstrong could be a guy that could fit into that situation, too.
That's a great point, because we didn't get to see him, really, since the beginning of the spring. He's been banged up. That wasn't, like, publicly a major deal, because he's not one of the top players on the team. No. But they kind of said, even Long said, we didn't really get to see
everything. He's a
run-receiving,
dual threat.
Mm-hmm. Baron Brown wants to know, what is your level of concern about the strong side defensive end position post Jay Hayes?
For me, significant. It was one of the first things that I think when somebody said that I was being negative again. But when Jay Hayes left, I mean, it's now, Khalid Kareem. Brian Kelly expresses concern about him going from 20 snaps to 60 snaps. Ogundeje is, he looks really good. He looks like an up-and-coming player, but we have no idea what he can do against a run or how many snaps he can play.
So that's a 3-snap to 30 snaps.
Yeah, I mean, it could be anywhere in there. And Jameer Jones is the third strong side defensive end. That's why I think, I know Justin Adamalola's position has always been strong side defensive end, but Jason's the better player. Am I mixing him up?
You're right.
Jason's the better player, and he's looked at as a 3 technique, but there's also some talk, I think it might have been on signing day, that maybe he could be a strong side defensive end. So, I don't know. Maybe both Adamalolas will start out there. I don't know.
I think if you add Jason Adamalola to the strong side end mix and look at Jameer Jones and say, like, he can be a functional snap guy who takes snaps, then I think they would be okay. But those are a couple big ifs that I think Notre Dame would probably rather not have asked, because Jay Hayes could have rendered that.
Not that Jay Hayes is a playmaker, but he's a barrier. Mm-hmm. He he's going to Oklahoma, so there must be something there that they like. Although, as you guys point out, Oklahoma's pretty bad defensively last year.
We got a question from Scott Gronick, and he wants to know, what do we think of Colin Grunhard's spring? Not somebody that we've talked about on previous podcasts.
Well, we know he can handle Darnell Yule.
Yeah.
So that's a backhanded plus, yeah. I guess, at this stage. But, he's a little undersized. I mean, I covered his dad when he played at Notre Dame, and he was as tough as they come. A lot bigger in stature than Colin is. But we also talked about off the air that if you can be undersized a little bit at any position at center. So, I mean, I think he's tough. I would imagine that he's as tough as nails as Tim Grunhard's son. And we know that he's handled a pretty highly touted nose guard that
It certainly is that bigger hasn't than him.
Panned out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got leverage on him. Definitely. Yeah,
I mean, whether Darnell Yu was a four-star or two-star, he's still bigger than Colin Grunhardt, and Colin Grunhardt's done a pretty good job.
He keeps adding weight. Well, Trevor Ruhlin's your starting center next year by default. Healthy Trevor Ruhlin.
And then incoming freshman Luke Jones is probably going to be a center.
So let's put it this way. Incoming freshman Luke Jones cannot start for Notre Dame next year if Trevor Ruhlin gets hurt.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
So that's now, why Colin Grunhardt's an important guy.
Now, yeah.
Who? Okay. That's the thing. Who's the moving guy right now? Who's the guy they would move? Because Alex Bars was a guy a long time ago. He'll be gone.
Yeah, and he'll be gone. Maybe.
Maybe Hainsey, right?
But, yeah, I've always felt like that was a possibility.
That Hainsey could be it. It maybe drifts away farther and farther away as he keeps being a starting tackle. But I think Colin Grunhardt will play football for Notre Dame in a backup role in his later years. He'll get on the field as opposed to
a Mark Harrell career.
Right. I think he's going to keep ascending as a player, and he may have to be used at some point.
Yeah, I would agree, and I apologize for always having to speak. Dylan Gibbons is a guy that, I thought it's a really bad habit of mine. I thought Dylan Gibbons actually might start out at center, but that right there, that tells you something about how they feel about Colin Grunhardt, that they would put him in in that position. So, and we don't know how badly Gibbons was injured the other day. I don't think it was serious.
No, he walked off.
Okay,
Speaking of walking off, so we thought Matt Bauer's year was over sitting up in the balcony when he did the hideous somersault. Drew Tranquil runs over. Great captain.
I thought
first
I heard
guy over there to pray for him. Brian Kelly's talking to him and trying to cheer him up. Comes off the field, and 5 minutes later, he puts his helmet on.
Goes
back in the scrimmage. Toughness, not an issue.
I told you, I like it. There's a lot to like about him, and I didn't, you know, I did not expect I was going to be saying Bo Bauer's way ahead of where Jack Lamb is, but physically.
No, that's a surprise to me.
Physically, absolutely.
We're sitting there with the Notre Dame official, having the binoculars, like, what's his face look like? Does he look okay? I go, well, he just jumped off the training table, so I guess he's all right. It looked terrible.
Could have sworn I heard a snap. I looked down and I thought I heard a snapping sound. It obviously wasn't that, but
it'd be really tough if that was.
Yeah.
Another O'Malley special question from Josh Jones. He wants to know, through 12 games, just the regular season, over under on Notre Dame's leading rusher at 1,049 yards, and over under on Notre Dame's leading receiver at 701 yards.
Under for running.
Yeah, I think that's split up too much.
I'm going to go under for receiving because I don't think Claypool will quite get to that in terms of, wait a minute, you know? Yeah, I'll go under on receiving. So St. Brown with Deshaun Kizer's in the 900s, right? I don't think there's a 900 yard receiver on this team. You could get to 800, but I think it'll be more of a kind of like, bring up 2012 because people like it, but where someone leads a team with 650, someone else has 575. You know, there's a couple guys involved, and they don't. I don't think Miles Boykin becomes a major go-to guy, and I don't think, not sure Chase Claypool should be elevated to that spot by us yet, since it's not by the staff.
What was the number for receiving?
701.
So that would be 54 yards per game.
I just think there's games where somebody won't have any. Some of these guys. I don't think Miles Boykin's getting 50
game. I would like to think that. I'd like to think that Claypool, I mean, the light's going to go completely on because we know he has that capability. It might be more long-term than short-term.
If you think of like 13, 14, 15, they certainly destroyed that with TJ Jones and Fuller. And 10, 11 with Floyd, they destroyed it. So I pulled up 12 real fast. And
maybe
I was Tyler Eifert. Eifert was
685, and TJ Jones was 649, 50 catches apiece. Yeah. I feel like that's the range of these guys.
Yeah, and you know, if let's say Claypool emerges, and let's say Mack emerges, well, then they're going to split some of those
catches. Although I'm not allowed to talk about it publicly, Mac would be a lot of yards this year.
You're not allowed to.
I'm self-imposed.
Oh, that's right.
Kind of like,
sanctions.
Yeah, sanctioned myself for last year's. Just the most curious thing of all time that it couldn't get open ever to catch a pass.
But
so.
Okay, if you can't say it, I'll go ahead and say it. There's absolutely no doubt if those two reach their potential.
Yeah. Here. Fun to watch and practice, man.
Yeah.
You have anything to say on that, Pete?
Under on the rushing for all the reasons you said. Over on the receiving because it's Chase Claypool.
We have our second bet.
Yeah. And we're talking about two guys that are clearly behind Miles Boykin according to the coaching staff. So
all right, last question, Brian Swint. One player, offense and defense who you think has developed the most this offseason through spring practice?
Tim.
So from bottom of the roster, Avery Davis is the obvious one. From where he was at the beginning of spring practice when I just thought it was cute that they moved him. I guess I wasn't high enough on him, but I want to say Alex Bars is the lasting impression for me. I just thought Mustafer was much better at the beginning of the spring, and now I keep noticing Alex Bars. Like, they kind of lied when they said they can't block Jerry Tiller, because Alex Bars can block Jerry Tiller. I was watching it happen in front of me. Yeah. I think he's...
Who said that? Who lied?
Brian Kelly said we can't block him. Alex Bars can block Jerry Tiller. How's that?
He said, Alex Bars can't block Jerry Tiller.
He said we can't block Jerry Tiller. So Bars would be my guy on kind of top end of the roster there on offense.
And defense? Okay, that's dead.
Houston Griffith from...
Okay.
You know, just all of a sudden I notice that guy every single solitary practice, right? Mm-hmm. He's not just an early enrollee. I'll just go with Houston Griffith.
I mean, should we... You know, this is going based upon the coaches, but I mean, maybe Liam Eichenberg is the guy that we should say there offensively. Yeah. Although I would throw out Javon McKinley. That's just...
Oh, that's a good one.
One I've seen. Defensively, I'm going to stick with my guy that... From the outset, I thought, wow, that's a guy that needs to be on the field. And it sounds like he's going to be a starter on the field, and that's Troy Pride.
I would go Bars, because I do think he's got a chance, not to be Quentin Nelson good, but really good, like mid-round pick, maybe mid-third-round type guy. I think he can have that kind of senior year. And then I go Khalid Kareem. I mean, he was coming on last year in bits and pieces, but I think... I've seen a lot of good stuff during spring ball. They really, really need it.
Yeah,
so
really need
Bars
it.
And Kareem are my two guys.
You know, I love just last thought on that. Alex Bars, the fact that he, he's pissed that he wasn't named a captain.
Yeah.
I don't know that he showed that publicly, but he was pissed that he wasn't named a captain. I think that's a good sign, because I'm not sure that would have even registered on his radar last year.
Yeah, no question. All right, well, that's it for this week's Irish Illustrated Insider. We'll be back on Thursday to talk a little bit about expectations for the Blue Bowl game, maybe how the format goes. I think we talked to offensive coaches and maybe
coordinators. We should get Jeff Quinn, Clark Lee this week, maybe a couple other people.
Yeah, so a few more coaches, no more practice access, but we'll be back Thursday for our final podcast before the Blue Bowl game, previewing Saturday's festivities in Notre Dame Stadium. So until then, Pete Sampson, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, thanks for listening.